ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, it was almost a certainty, wasn't it? But now the chances of any sort of rate cut to coincide with Tuesday's Melbourne Cup have greatly diminished, broken down on the bend, as it were, to continue the metaphor, because the Reserve Bank Board will now have to consider the latest data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, which shows consumer prices rising at an annual pace of 3.2%. That's up from 2.1% in the June quarter. Now, that's no good. The Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, says state-based energy rebates coming to an end probably caused part of the spike, but the new figures certainly gave the opposition some ammunition. This is Susan Lee.
Earlier this year, the Treasurer went on a victory lap, declaring, quote, inflation is down substantially and in a sustained way. Yet today, inflation has shot up above all expectations, jumping to 3.2%. This means no relief for households, no relief when seeing the doctor, no rate cuts in sight, and families paying an additional $1,800 on their mortgage. With Australians suffering through the largest decline in living standards in the developed world, why is it when Labor fails, Australians always foot the bill?
Well, there it was. I was about to say it was a break from banned T-shirts, but more on that in a moment. The Federal Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, also had some numbers of his own, though, as a counterfoil in Question Time.
The government made very clear promises to the Australian people to reduce prices, to get prices down, not to slow the rate of growth of price increases. And this is the danger. If you go to the Australian people and make a very clear commitment that the price of something is going to come down, but in fact it skyrockets, then you have to be accountable for that.
Yeah, well, joining us for the Nightlife News Breakdown tonight is Ron Mizen, political correspondent for the Australian Financial Review. Ron, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Good evening. Good to be back.
The Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, says the state-based energy rebates coming to an end caused part of the spike, he says. But there's a bit more going on here, isn't there?
Yeah, we were expecting to see a pretty significant uptick in headline inflation as some of these state-based electricity rebates have come off the boil. We're expecting to see a similar thing later in the year when the federal rebate comes off. And Jim Chalmers in Question Time yesterday was trying to get ahead of this, saying this was expected, don't worry, don't spook the horses. But the figure came in much, much worse than anyone was expecting, much worse than the RBA was forecasting only in August, much worse than economists were expecting. And it was both headline and underlying inflation. So, you know, while we're expecting an uptick in what we call headline inflation, which includes every sort of uptick in price in different categories, and we're expecting to see that go up because of electricity prices, what was really worrying was this really significant growth in underlying inflation, which strips away the more volatile stuff like electricity. Mm. And so that's what's got, I guess, people worried. It's what's got economists worried. I suspect it probably has Jim Chalmers a little worried, even though it is at the top of the band. The RBA hopes to get inflation between 2% and 3%, preferably around the middle. You know, it's the trajectory. It's the first time since, I think, 2023 that we've seen annual inflation actually grow.
What's driving it, Ron?
There's a few different elements. You've got, high labour prices effectively at the moment. We were still seeing some of the EBAs locked in over previous years come through. But there's also a whole bunch of other things like housing has come through. The price of lamb grew 17% last year. There's been a whole bunch of different products like chocolate and coffee prices have also gone through the roof. That's more to do with global factors. And there's also eggs is another one everyone would have noticed over the last couple of months have also gone through the roof because of culling of the national flock. There's a whole bunch of different things that are all leading to this pressure.
Yeah, and for those with mortgages, they might have been thinking, will there be some end-of-year relief? Not much chance of a further rate cut for the foreseeable future, is there?
No chance at all. And certainly the expectation from economists is now that we will see a long period with rates on hold at 3.6% where they are now, and that the next move could even be up in either late 26 or early 27. You know, this is a very significant, just to illustrate the unexpected nature of these figures, last week, the financial markets were forecasting an 80% chance of a rate cut on Melbourne Cup Day. It's now 4%. So adding to the worry of that is that we are still seeing the unemployment rate tick up now at 4.5%. And so the RBA will certainly be hoping to, you know, see that stabilise, wanting to see what happens with that, and also wanting to see what happens with prices over the second half of the year. But anyone hoping for a rate cut, you know, any time in the next 6 months, it probably will be disappointed.
Yes, the government will be highly disappointed too, I would imagine. All right, look, it's not good news. No, that's right. Now, I mentioned the fact that banned T-shirts might have disappeared. Not so, despite the fodder the figures have given her to attack the government with. This is the inflation figures. The opposition leader's comments yesterday, where she criticised the Prime Minister for wearing a Joy Division T-shirt, have backfired somewhat. She's refused to back down from her call for the Prime Minister to apologise, despite coalition MPs pretty much lining up to distance themselves from comments that have stolen attention from their policy messages. National Senators Bridget McKenzie and Matt Canavan said they couldn't care less what T-shirt Mr Albanese wore, and others refused to back Susan Lee's criticism. The Coalition Industrial Relations spokesman Tim Wilson held a press conference today trying to highlight CFMEU transgressions, but was questioned instead about Lee's judgments. Nevertheless, she doubled down today.
I don't take a backward step on my comments, and I don't know that people realise that the Prime Minister, in wearing the T-shirt, was well aware of the dark history behind the words on the T-shirt.
Yes, to quote an old piece of political vernacular, I think it was from Mr. Daly years ago in the House of Representatives, I'm sure, said something from the campaign trail years ago, Ron. You've got to know when you get when to give up because they're pissing on your swag. Is this an instance of what's going on?
Look, this is it's certainly sucking up a lot of airtime, probably airtime that many people would rather be spending, you know, talking about other things. But, you know, Susan Lee did double down today. She did, you know, refuse to back down from those calls for the Prime Minister to apologise for wearing that shirt. But it just doesn't seem like it's going her way. You know, we've had a swag of opposition MPs and national MPs come out and basically refuse to back her in. I think the government has struggled to find any of the Jewish groups who are, you know, haven't been backwards in criticising the government over recent years, who weren't really willing to engage in it. You know, it sparked a lot of debate around the history of the name of the band, and there's a lot of interesting think pieces out there. I won't delve into that too much, but look, from a purely political perspective, Susan Lee is, you know, her leadership is tenuous. It's not clear whether she even continues to have the numbers in the opposition party room. She faced a lot of criticism from Peter Credlin on Sky News, you know, who they're talking to the Liberal Party base all the time, saying that, you know, she should have gone harder on this. Peter Credlin's view was that Albanese was warned about the meanings of this T-shirt 3 years ago and then should have known better. And that's really what Susan Lee has latched onto. But, you know, when you're sort of standing out the front and nobody's with you, you've got to ask whether that's a good political decision on her part. And, you know, the general consensus of the gallery and those in the commentariat seem to be that not so. And, of course, this comes after her criticism last week, basically calling for Kevin Rudd to be sacked, which she then had to roll back because, again, few in her party room backed her, and actually it turned out that he'd done an okay job.
Yes, I don't think too many people in Australia care less whether you wear a band T-shirt or not. Anyway.
Do you own a band T-shirt?
I don't own a band T-shirt.
But I don't either. I was thinking about it.
I mean, who owns these things? I mean, how on earth does he keep a, Joy Division T-shirt from all those years ago anyway?
Oh, he's known for this. He's got plenty of band T-shirts. Walk up and down a plane in them.
Oh, okay. You and me together, Ron, we'll be the dags at the party then, by the sound.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay too. Hey, to a story you've been covering for the Financial Review, Ron, federal and New South Wales government leaders have been scrambling to keep the Tomago Aluminium smelter in Newcastle in New South Wales running, with a bailout reportedly worth more than $1 billion on offer. Now, it's Australia's biggest aluminium smelter. It produces nearly 600,000 tonnes of the metal a year. It employs more than 1,000 full-time staff, 200 contractors, obviously with all the spill on employment effects of that, the operators of the smelter, it's majority owned by mining giant Rio Tinto, said high energy costs had forced the government to consider ending operations when its electricity supply contracts expire in 2028. The Chris Bowen, the climate change minister, is defending the government's consideration of a bailout, arguing that sometimes there are good reasons to offer taxpayer-funded support.
It goes to strategic importance, regional importance, and the long-term viability. You know, sometimes a facility can be temporarily facing challenges, but you can see that in the long term, when they get through those challenges, they will be viable.
It goes to, Ron, it puts a lot of focus on the Labor government's priorities and the old Made in Australia push, maintaining and building up Australian manufacturing and expanding and reuse of renewables and so on. But big taxpayer dollar commitments needed, it would appear. Look, Australia's got a long history, Australian heavy industry's got a long history of putting out its hand for handouts, which never seem to be ever given back. What's going on here, Ron? Is Tomago just having a go 2 years out, thinking there might be some government money here? Because it looks like there was for Whyalla, there was in Tasmania for the zinc people down there, and up in Queensland there's been dough handed out, so why not us?
Yeah, look, I mean, that's an interesting point, but I mean, they were offered the money and they said no, which is, I guess, the most remarkable thing. And they've sort of made this calculation that it's better for them to potentially close the Tomago smelter in 2028. Now, the reason for that really is because from 2028, they have to renew their electricity contracts. And the cost of their electricity is expected to absolutely soar through the roof. And the gap, the CEO has said that the gap between when those contracts expire and when a cheap, reliable source of renewable energy can come online has blown out. Basically, there's just no real way that it's feasible to get it through that period. Other than, we should be clear, other than the taxpayers putting in more, which is through a sort of basically guaranteeing a cheap supply of energy. So we buy it expensive from the retailer and sell it back to Tomago at a lower rate. Yeah, maybe that works. But at the end of the day, you know, you've got to wonder what is the dollar figure on protecting
jobs. Yeah, I mean, this is taxpayers putting the dough in again. And we've seen this time and again in Australia, haven't we, with this, you know, the steel industry, the car industry, the textiles, clothing and footwear industry. I mean, it's a well-worn path in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of my colleagues did a good piece of work a couple of weeks ago that basically showed that the cost per job saved so far in the bailout of smelters is about $1 million a job.
That's right.
Now, the government will say, well, you know, hang on, that's not actually the reason that we're doing this in every case. There's national interest and national security considerations that we need to create rare earths. We need to have the ability to create aluminium and steel and other things, you know, in Australia. Now, Tomago, I think, produces about 38% of Australia's aluminium. It's not the only smelter. So if it was to go under, there would be other places to get it. But, you know, this is the bigger thing that the government is having to really deal with over the next 2 years. As those electricity prices have gone up, a lot of these facilities, and we know that there are at least half a dozen, if not more, that are in a position where they could go under. And in, the government has to make a call. Do we you know, throw more money at them to try and get them through this period to when electricity is cheaper, or do we let them go under? And so far, it seems like they're not willing. But perhaps Tomago could be the test case.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, those who've spent a long time around industry policy over many decades would feel a strong sense of deja vu here, I must say. All right. The Albanese government's expected to introduce its planned overhaul of environment law, the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation, or EPBC Act. This is a big piece of legislation, isn't it, Ron? It's been briefing interest groups on its plans this week. There have been extracts of plan changes, which have prompted apparent anger from conservation organisations, who fear state governments might be given expanded powers to make decisions on some fossil fuel developments. Also concerned that politicians rather than independent agencies would have power to not only grant approvals but also to have override powers. We're going to get a look at this legislation tomorrow. It's a key piece of productivity legislation apart from anything else, isn't it, Ron?
Yeah, well, Ken Henry, the former Treasury Secretary, has described it as probably the most significant thing you can do to boost productivity in Australia. I've got the 1,500-odd page copy of that legislation in front of me right now and trying to get through it and read it.
What page up to, right?
I'd be embarrassed to say. I can tell you that I'm not past a couple of hundred. But look, this is a really significant piece of legislation. Labor wasn't able to land it during the last term of Parliament, despite it sounded like having struck a deal towards the end of Parliament with the Greens. Now, you know, Murray Watt, the new Environment Minister, has been consulting on this. As he told us today, he's had more than 100 meetings with various stakeholders to try and get this ready. And I haven't been surprised, frankly, to see what's happened. You've got environmental groups and the Greens on one side saying it's basically got businesses' fingerprints all over it. It doesn't do enough to protect the environment. And on the other side, you've got the coalition, you've got business groups saying, this is just it does nothing to help them and doesn't actually go far enough. And there's too many caveats to make projects not go anywhere. And I suspect that's probably the sweet spot for the government. I think the government's probably happy to see them both saying that on either side. They've made very clear that they're open to negotiating with either party to get this legislation through. It's difficult to say which one that they will ultimately land a deal with. Susan Lee is, as we've talked about earlier, still dealing with a lot of internals from the right wing of her party, who some of them don't even believe in climate change. So, whether they're happy to see stronger environmental laws, who knows? On the other side, of course, you've got the Greens that want to, climate trigger and stronger protections for native forests. So I think the government would be happy to do a deal with the coalition, because then it's the two party of governments, and there's less of a chance that you'll see this watered down if the coalition wins, whenever that might be in the future. But it's going to be an interesting period of consultation. They will try and get this into a Senate inquiry to report by, I think, late November, and the minister definitely wants this legislation through the Parliament by the end of the year. Whether he can achieve that or not.
I was going to say good luck to that. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a very key part, important part of piece of legislation, though, and as you rightly say. Look, before we go, Ron, part of a breaking story. The early part of the story was out earlier today, but there's chaos in the offing in the Senate. The Albanese government's taken the extraordinary step of threatening to remove opposition MPs from senior committee positions. This is in retaliation from a move by ACT Independent Senator David Pocock to increase the length of question time in the Senate. Tell us the background to this and what the government's drawn their gun on this. Tell us the background and what the government's planning to do.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. So basically there's a report that the government did into the appointment of people to parliamentary, to government boards. Mm-hmm. And this happened more than 2 years ago. And as you mentioned, Independent Senator David Pocock has been trying to use the Senate processes to get this report for 2 years now. He's had no luck at all. And today he basically said, I'm fed up. And he moved a motion in the Senate, which was supported by the Coalition, the Greens and the Crossbench, to add 5 non-government questions in question time and adds about 30 minutes to the thing. Now, that's, I guess, in and of itself, you might hear that and go, oh, well, whatever, government answers more questions. But it's actually quite a remarkable intervention. It's a bit unprecedented. We have the government of the day's agenda being overridden by the crossbench as a punishment for secrecy. And what I've been hearing is that the government is not going to take this lying down. They have actually issued threats to the coalition and said, if you don't backflip on this, we're going to start removing deputy chairs of parliamentary committees in the House of Representatives committees. Now, that means basically, a whole bunch of politicians could be sacked from their committee jobs and lose the additional pay that they get from that. Now, that's a pretty remarkable step that the government would take, and I imagine it will be a tit for tat. There would be retaliations from the coalition as well. So it'd be really interesting to see how this evolves tomorrow. But, after 2 years, maybe they should just release the report.
Why don't they just release the report? Yes, exactly. It does lead to think it's not passing the sniff test. There's something here that they don't want revealed.
Yes. Well, what are they called? You ever watch Yes Minister? The great Krango?
Yes,
the board position that doesn't require much but pays well.
That's right. Exactly. Yes, don't underestimate how much backbench MPs love these committee positions, because they get paid more. All right. Indeed. Ron, good to talk. As always, great to have you back too.
No worries. Have a good night.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.